Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf, using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
This is Ben Gujan with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I am thrilled to be talking art with pianist and composer Andrzej Kozłowski, who is performing his farewell concert, Andrzej and Friends, at the Sound Conservatory in downtown Moline on June 22nd at 5:30 p.m. Andrzej, welcome to Talking Art. I'm so excited to get to sit down and talk with you.
Thank you for having me, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got a performance coming up, Andrzej and Friends. That is your farewell performance, and we'll get into that. But tell me about the performance. What can folks expect to hear?
Well, I've been in the Quad Cities now 4 years with my wife. And I have to say it's been my favorite place to live here in the U.S. And I've had the great pleasure of working with a lot of phenomenal musicians. And this performance will be my last opportunity to work with some of these great musicians here in the Quad Cities. I'm going to be working with baritone Nathan Wint, clarinetist Rob Miller, and then a few other musicians, part of a string quintet I've put together for one of my compositions. I will be featuring lots of works by other composers, such as Schubert, Schumann, Chopin. I will also be featuring some of my favorite compositions I've written over the years, as well as premiering a new quintet called A Story of the Displaced.
Wonderful. Well, I've known you as a business owner and a pianist, and I'm really kind of new to your composition work. So we're going to take a listen to a little of one of your original pieces. What piece is this?
So this is part of three poems. This is the second piece called Nocturne in F minor, nicknamed Tragedia, which is Polish for tragedy.
Wonderful. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
you're leaving. Mm-hmm. Part of you leaving is obviously, as you said, politically driven, or because you're kind of being forced to leave the country. Before we dive into that a little bit more, I want to hear more about the Sound Conservatory. You know, you said mm-hmm. the Quad Cities was your favorite place you've lived here.
Yeah.
And you built something really special here in the Sound Conservatory. And I'll talk more about my relationship with that later, but tell us about the Sound Conservatory and what it is and what it's meant to you.
Well, it's one of my biggest dreams come true. To me, the arts are not just a form of entertainment. It's a crucial part of our culture, part of our introspection as humans. And I find it is also crucial in the development of our society, and especially in our children, intellectually, emotionally, in every aspect. And I originally opened the Sound Conservatory with only the intentions of being a music academy, you know, the teaching sure. studios, providing space for teachers to have a professional environment to teach kids, adults, anyone. And it has grown into something I never imagined it would have. I mean, we are now the largest music academy based on our student population. We're a music instrument, accessory retailer, piano moving company, piano rebuilding space, and a concert venue where we've had the incredible honor of hosting some amazing performances from world-renowned musicians, famous comedians, magicians, and playwriters like yourself. It's been an experience that I never in my life imagined I would be a part of, and I've been really excited to be a part of it, and I'm really excited for its future as I part ways from it and hand the torch down to its new owners.
Yeah, and I'm so excited that there are going to be new owners. You know, you talk about all the things you did, and that's what's always been so impressive to me about you is – like, we talk about people being multi-hyphenates, and you've got about 14 hyphens in the things that you do with, you know, like you said, the academy and piano rebuilding and piano moving and a performance venue and retail and all these things. And I feel Sound Conservatory has really become an artistic hub and home for so many people in the Quad yeah. Cities. And I'm thrilled that you have built that, and that I've been able to partner with you in both my personal artistic journey and also professionally. You know, Quad City Arts, we've hosted several concerts at your venue, and yeah. you've been such a great community partner in that way, in opening up your space. And that's, to me, that's, I mean, just aside from me liking you as a person, you know, that is a loss of that community partner. So
yeah.
I appreciate the openness with which you have welcomed people in to that building, you know, and it's such a great building too.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can't beat a Carnegie building.
Yeah,
it's a fortress.
Yeah, it really is. And that's one thing that's also been really impressive to me is, you know, a lot of people talk about doing things, but you are yeah. a person of action.
Yeah, that's something that anyone that knows me on a personal level knows. I get very frustrated about, about people. Is we've got so many great ideas here in the Quad Cities, and not, you know, I don't mean just Quad Cities, but as a nation as a whole. But people are scared to take a chance. And the thing is, life is about taking a risk. And yeah, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to mm-hmm. flop things. I mean, if anyone knew how many mistakes I made, you know, growing this business, I still make them till this day. And but you can't accomplish anything without being open to making these mistakes, because they are the greatest learning tool you could have.
Yeah.
At least for me personally, I know I'm a better learner when it comes to trying something, probably messing it up several times, and figuring out, you know, what needs to be done and how. And I encourage people who have these ideas that have a vision for something that they believe will benefit not only their own life, but those around them, take a chance. Just who cares if you make a mistake? You know what? You can't be upset with life because you made a mistake doing something for the better of those around you. You can only be upset with yourself if you just sit back and hope that someone else does it. Yeah. You know, we've got one life, and if you're just sitting there waiting for someone else to do something, well, you're going to be sitting and waiting for a long time. You know, it to me, it ties in with the mentality of it is better to give than to receive, because if all give, all receive.
Right.
And if we're all sitting there hoping to receive something being accomplished by others, we're all going to be just sitting there waiting. And I'm tired of that. And that's something I was tired of, too. And why Sound Conservatory came to being is because I said to myself, you know what? I don't have the money. I don't have the knowledge necessarily or the resources, but I'm going to do it. And those around me who saw my vision and believed in it, I felt that it infected them, that they jumped on board. And the support I've had from those around me really is the reason why we've become successful. I mean, I provided a platform and I had those around me really help make this happen. And that's what this is about. That's why the arts are so important, because it really breaks down all kinds of barriers that hold us back from working together in society, unlike anything else. And we need the arts. We need music. And I don't care what it is, country, rock, rap, folk, classical, jazz, we need all of it.
Well, and it's so important too, you know, with, I'm obviously also in the performing arts world.
Yeah.
Like that sense of bringing people together. Mm-hmm. We can all sit at home and watch a TV show all day long. And there's great TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
I love them. Great movies. Love them. But with live performance, you're bringing people together and creating that sense of community. Yes. And that's something that I've spoken with so many people in the community about, is that they appreciated specifically about Sound Conservatory was that it felt like a community, the people who were attending your concerts or performing there, mm-hmm. you know, and in an age, and, you know, maybe this ties us to you leaving a little bit, like in an age where we're very divided,
yeah,
like that is important.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can put on a show and there are people from any background who can come and appreciate the music or that performance or that festival, you know, and those things show us our similarities rather than our differences.
Yeah. And to add to that, what it really makes us think about is the things that we are being told to divide us aren't really as important as they make them seem to be.
No.
These tools of division that are being used against us, especially in this political atmosphere, are really insignificant when it comes to the quality of life and happiness, because we're being taught to fight against or resist against things that really don't affect our own lives. You know, what do we need in life to be happy, to be successful? Those are things that we're not being told to pay attention to and listen to and think about. And if we did, we'd realize that this massive movement towards division is really just a tool for empowerment for others and not for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about the importance of the arts. And obviously we're in a time where the arts and arts funding mechanisms are being stripped away and taken down. But the arts, they have always been and will always be a tool for social change and for people speaking up, but then also for bringing people together And, you know, going off what you said, like, it makes sense that there are people who want to take that away because arts are a thing that bring people together and provide voices.
Correct. And it's an incredible education source. I mean, being a music academy at Sound Conservatory, one of the big things is understanding that music education is a crucial part of intellectual development in our youth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure people who are going to be listening to this that have heard me talk have heard me mention this before. A 2019 study done by the APA following 110,000 students from fifth grade all the way through high school who enrolled in music programs and stuck with them through graduation, graduated high school with an academic achievement a year ahead of their peers who didn't participate in the arts, performing arts. And, you know, why aren't we addressing that? If we're trying to divide, create a nation of smarter, harder working people, why aren't we using a tool that has been proven to do that?
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense to me.
No. And it makes me think back, like, you know, to the Greeks, sure. of like, we are creating well-rounded citizens who yeah. are capable in athletics and arts yeah. and debate and all of these things. Yeah. And, you know, it feels like a lot of times our education system has gotten so focused on standardized testing results. And, yeah. you know, they strip away these other things to be able to focus more. Yeah. But they're stripping away things that are the tools yeah. to provide the results.
Yeah. And especially right now, you know, is it true that we have issues with our education system? Yes. You know, there are things that aren't working. There are things that are working. But the approach that's being used right now in order to strip everything away just because some things aren't working, what does that fix? I mean, I don't understand that. You can't fix a problem if you're eliminating any and all of the tools in order to accomplish that. So I just don't understand, and it worries me, and it should worry everyone, because, you know, this is the future of our country. You know, educating our youth is crucial for the health and well-being of our nation. You know, we are concerned about, you know, losing jobs to the outside world. Well, we're not going to get those jobs back if we're not educating our people.
Right.
Giving them the tools and resources to be able to develop into those areas. And so I just don't understand it.
Well, and you see with performing arts and visual arts too, like mm-hmm. that nurturing of creativity, you know, even if you're studying art or music and don't go on to as a career as an mm-hmm. artist or musician or an actor or whatever, those creative tools you are learning through the arts apply everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, like
innovation.
Yeah. And my kind of my favorite of my multi-hyphenateism is directing theater. And I like it's problem solving. Like that is all it is. I've got a bunch of words on a page and I have to solve the problem
yeah.
of how to make that visually appealing for an audience. Yeah. And you need to problem solve in every job. There's not yeah. a job where you don't need to problem solve in some way. And it's like you said, it's just frustrating and kind of not understandable that we aren't nurturing those problem solving yeah. skills with a tool that is shown time and time again
yeah.
that it nurtures problem solving skills.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like I was saying, you know, if we want to become the leading nation of innovation in regards to whatever it is, whether it's science, medicine, the arts, infrastructure, you name it, it doesn't matter what it is. We need to nurture the ability to think outside of just common thought.
Yeah.
Because common thought is based on what we already know exists and works. It doesn't allow us to break past that regular thought to see things from new perspectives or create new perspectives on things in order to create these new ideas that others may have not thought of because of the approach of learning things as they are instead of what if we look at it from this side? What if we implement these two things into it? And that's what the arts does because, you know, speaking from the musical aspect, when you're taking a piece of music, you're looking at black dots and ink on a piece of paper, and you have to put that to life. Mm-hmm. You know, because simply just playing a bunch of notes accurately on the piano doesn't make music. It's taking those notes and knowing how to manipulate them to create life out of the sound, to make it sound like human emotion or painting a picture. You know, how do you do that outside of what's on the page? You have to dig into areas of your brain that you would normally not do so. And that applies to, you know, in acting too. You know, it's you're not an actor because you can read and memorize words on a piece of paper. It's how you say those words. What are you doing with your voice in order to convey those words to be understood, literal or figuratively, whatever it is? And those are things that stir a whole different thought process in the brain than just doing, you know, math problems or memorizing terms in your biology class or memorizing historical data. Nothing against those things. We need those things. Mm-hmm. But that is not the complete essence of intellectual development. We're missing a big component, and that is thought outside of just memorizing information and being able to regurgitate it. It's taking information and learning how to manipulate it to discover new things and create other things.
Well, yeah, that makes me think of, you know, the great thinkers of our times and past times who were, whether scientists or physicists, like, they didn't make the great discoveries they made
by following
the rules and the way things were taught. Yeah. They made those discoveries by looking at things from new perspectives.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I feel as a theater artist and actor, you have to do so much. Like, if, like you said, it was just the notes on the page, you know, what's the difference in seeing, you know, Ian McKellen in Waiting for Godot versus Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
Like, you go see those two things because they are two different approaches and perspectives that are each going to bring their own life to that, that show and that role.
Exactly. And, you know, there's and people can relate to that, you know, when they see an actor put their characteristics and their personal emotional touch into these things, they can relate to that. And that's what draws people to it.
Yeah.
You know, who cares if you can memorize a bunch of lines? What can you do with those lines is what we're after. And to me, some people will not like this comment, but who cares that you know how to do a bunch of great math problems? You know, pretty much anyone can learn that. You're learning a formula that you can replicate over and over again. In the arts, it's not about replicating. It's about discovering and thinking deeply about how to take that formula and changing it around. And that's what creates individuality and individualism and your personal characteristics. And it creates interest in life. Otherwise, life would just be boring.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are, as part of your next chapter, you're going to be going back into more performing.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And we can talk about your history as a performer, but like, what do you feel you bring to performance? I know you have a longtime relationship with the music of Chopin.
Yes.
Who's also Polish. You know, what do you try to bring as an artist?
Well, you know, I will never claim to be, you know, one of the great pianists when it comes from the technical standpoint. And, you know, as much as I constantly aspire to work towards greatness in the technical realm of the instrument, because it allows me to then explore things emotionally. For me, I have always sought after being as true to the music as can be without the fear of criticism that it's not authentic to the composer's intentions, or that the listeners may not 100% like it. I have not been worried about that kind of criticism, because for those who seek authenticity, you have to expect criticism, because performing music, especially your own compositions, is not about seeking approval of others. It's about being as true to what you have to say as you can be, with the hopes that you do it as well as possible so people don't misunderstand it, and not avoiding misunderstanding. Because if you're trying to avoid it, then you are appeasing to the listener for what they want, and compromising yourself as a personality, as a person who is trying to seek answers through their music or discovering things or trying to convey a story. So that's one thing that I know I have always been able to give in my performances, is that I allow my emotions to take control of my music, and I don't worry about the criticism that may come from it.
Sure. Well, and that's such an interesting, I think, differentiation as an artist, when you are playing someone else's piece who, you know, like you said, there is a concern you need to have about what level of authorial intent are you honoring. You know, and I know that's the same thing, especially when you're directing a play. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, someone else has written, mm-hmm. like, okay, this author obviously yep. had intent with their play. Mm-hmm. As the director, I need to honor that. But as an artist, I also want to have my voice of what this play says, yeah. versus something that you've written yourself. And yeah. it's like, this is mine.
Yeah.
This is what I'm giving you.
Yeah. Well, I still think, you know, especially in the classical piano world, there is a little bit of, I'm not going to say pretentiousness, but I think this fear of breaking away from what we historically believe is the composer's intentions. And I think that is skewed a little bit, because you look at productions of operas. You know, are these operas performed in the same attire that was used during the premiere of these operas? You know, you see a lot of these modern operas, their staging and production is modernized. Yeah. Same thing with plays, or, you know, with films that are redone. Why aren't we doing that with the interpretations of classical composers at the piano? Why aren't we modernizing our interpretations to adjust to how our emotions and cultures are now? Because the way we would interpret Chopin in the 19th century was done a certain way because of certain social norms, certain societal understandings. And to then play his music only in that way, we are trying to, you know, convey the emotional understanding and capacity of society that doesn't exist anymore. So we are, I believe, then skewing the intentions of the music, because the way we think, the way we feel things, and the knowledge we have of things around us is different than during Chopin's time. So why aren't we adjusting how we approach playing his music when it's supposed to explain and express a certain emotion to make sure that the approach we're using in the piece expresses and approaches the piece emotionally from today's perspective of those emotions and those things we know around us. And that may mean playing the music a little bit different than what was originally known or understood to be performed at. And so meaning interpretation. And in most parts of the world, that is frowned upon. Oh, that's not how Chopin intended it to be played. Yes, during his life, but why can't we say that, you know, based on our society today, this is what I believe this piece would be interpreted for today's understandings and standards. So I don't know if I'm kind of going crazy with that, but I do believe in experimentation of interpretation of classical composers to make sure that we create a modern approach to understanding the music so that way it stays relevant to today's people. But yet we do need aspects of preservation of how the composer's music was meant to be performed. We need to have both worlds, I believe, not just preserve the old. Preserve the old, but also modernize it so today's people can stay relevant to its meaning.
Well, and I think that's, you know, I'm a big Samuel Beckett fan, and, you know, his estate is very strict. Like, you have to, if you get rights for his show, you have to do it strictly as written. And, you know, I feel sometimes with a lot of theater, when you see theater perform that way, even if the performers or the direction is incredible, it feels like what I call a museum piece. It's a piece of theater that is meant to be looked at.
And, it's not art.
Right. But I think a lot of probably his thoughts about, like, you got to do it this way, maybe came from, you know, when he was writing in that period in the 60s when theatrical form really exploded and kind of the avant-garde of that theater of the time. You had people, and I always think of it as like, we're going to do Shakespeare, but on the moon. You know, you had these people exploring these different interpretations that were maybe not grounded in the text and not honoring the intention, but were doing things differently just to do them.
Yeah.
And so I feel some of that, you got to do it this way, is probably an overreaction to the, you went too far.
it becomes kind of black and white. There's no acceptance of a little bit of gray area.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was
that's
that.
That's the interesting stuff is the gray area.
Yeah.
That's where things are fun.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, I mean, and having those extreme approaches stirs thought and stirs ideas to innovate and maybe realize that, hey, this interpretation that we've been so stuck on of something needs to be rethought. I mean, there was a 1960s theatrical reimagination of Macbeth by a Polish playwright where it was done on Harleys. I'm sure that wasn't well received originally, but it stirred thought and probably inspired others to create their own visions of these plays and maybe new plays.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a certain level of welcoming to these things, and not this frowning upon and calling it a destruction of the art. I mean, you're not destroying it. You still have the ability to preserve it and perform things as they were intended. But so to say that someone who's performing something outside of the expected approach is destroying it, well, you didn't destroy it. You gave your perspective on it. And it is up to the viewer and the society to decide whether they want to keep it around or not. But, you know, that's the thing is we need to be less scared to take those chances.
Yeah, well, that goes back to what you were saying earlier. You know, one of my favorite things to do to myself as a theater artist is not have any clue what I'm doing and put out a press release. You know, then all right, it's in the world. We got to do this. We got to figure this out.
Well, that was kind of like with this concert. You know, I announced this performance and that I am working on a larger work, a quintet. And I hadn't even started it. I'm like, well, I guess I should start it. Yeah. And, 2 weeks later, I had a quintet completed, the story of the displaced.
Yeah.
And it all boils down to we need to make sure that the art world is open to fresh ideas and being less critical of them before anything happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I know my interpretations of Chopin are not something that would ever be accepted by the Chopin Institute or the competition. And I'm okay with that. I'm not seeking the approval of a society for my interpretations. I am trying to interpret the music the way I believe it. Had I been Chopin and I wrote this piece, this is how emotionally I would perform this. And, because if someone enrages you about something, let's say someone hits your car in a parking lot, the way you react to it emotionally is differently than I or another person. We're all feeling enraged by it, but the way we feel it is differently. So for me to feel enraged the same way you do it, because that's what I'm being told feeling enraged feels like, is not authentic to me. So that's what I try to do with my interpretations of Chopin, is understand what is he trying to convey in the music, and how would I convey that had this been me? And we need more of that in the art world. There is a fear of it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite pianists, Christian Zimmermann, said something back in 1999 that the recording industry has successfully destroyed the art of the classical music by homogenizing the way music is to be interpreted, to make sure that it is accepted by everyone, that it is optimal for sales numbers, that taking daring and, creating new approaches is dangerous because it may be criticized and may not sell well. That is the death of art, and you see that nowadays it's very hard to distinguish some of these great pianists from one another when you listen to them. They're incredible on the virtuosic side. The technical flawlessness of these pianists nowadays is just unimaginable. But they tend to lack individual characteristics in their playing from one another.
Sure.
You listen to pianists, like Maurizio Pollini, Marta Argerich, Yevgeny Kissin, Adam Harashevich, Artur Rubinstein. You hear their own style in their playing. And after listening to a few recordings of them, you could listen to a work that you've not heard them play before and in many cases distinguish, that sounds like this pianist playing, or it sounds like that pianist playing. We've lost that.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that's been so eye-opening to me with Quad City Arts and like our Visiting Artist series is, we had very specifically a couple of drummers over the last couple of years, Sonny Jane and Allison Miller, who, both live in the jazz realm, but they have such unique playing styles and just such an individual sound. And obviously, I think jazz accepts that more than maybe the classical world does, where it's like, no, we want the improv, we want the individualism and you to create your own sound.
Well, and look at that. In the jazz world, how many styles of jazz have evolved because of that?
Yeah.
Because instead of limiting the music genre that it's
jazz.
Yeah, instead of limiting, this is how it's done. You can't break out of that because it's not acceptable. You limit the development of new ideas. I mean, you know, jazz is a perfect example of that. The amount of jazz voices out there when it comes to styles is just unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I think about like Tal Cohen and John Versa, you know, who you've had multiple times at Sound Conservatory.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Tal's playing at the piano. When you hear him playing, you know it's him playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you hear John playing on the trumpet, it's, you know, it's him playing. And that's what art needs to be. It's not about achieving the greatest technical capability. And like I said, don't get me wrong. That is an incredible thing to accomplish. But that's not the goal of art, to achieve technical, you know, greatness over everyone else. You know, that's showing that you have developed your tools,
yeah,
and you've sharpened them perfectly. You've buffed them. You know, you've polished them up. But what are you doing with those tools? What are you creating with those tools?
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, is it a robotic approach, or are you really expressing your voice through someone else's music?
Well, and it makes me think of like pre-Stanislavski acting when, you know, we had like basically our etudes of like, oh, to express grief, you're going to put the back of your hand on your forehead.
Yeah.
Your other hand will go out behind you. This is where your feet will be placed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, realism was pushed against big time.
Yeah.
It was like, what are you doing? How could you do that? I'm like, well, you know, why aren't we expressing real human emotion the way we do it on the in life, on the stage, you know, and look what it has evolved into. You know, look at our cinematic world because of it. You know, would cinema exist the way it does had it not been for, you know, the introduction of realism into theater?
Yeah.
No. Probably not.
No.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that style of theater, but, you know, to say we can't have that style, why?
Yeah.
And that you know, circles back to what I was saying. Why can't we have interpretations of these great composers that are not of the norm? It's not like we're trying to eliminate the ones that are authentic to the time and the composer. It's just giving us more options. It opens the doors to more listeners to be interested in the music. You know, because some people will be pulled towards that more than the authentic, you know, quote unquote approach. And then there are people who will be more pulled into the authentic as opposed to the extreme. And then there's everything in between. That's what we need in art.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's like you think of your art as like a burger. Like if every burger was the same, like you'd get real bored of burgers. Like,
terrible thing to bring up food because I am hungry. But yeah, it's true.
But
yeah,
the fun of burgers is like, oh, I can go here and get one with an egg on it, and I can go here and get one with some jalapenos on it. And
there's one with peanut butter and jelly, you know, and bacon. Sounds delicious. To some, no, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You don't have to eat it if you don't like it. You don't have to listen to it if you don't like it. There's other approaches to it. And well, yeah.
This is maybe totally off topic, but, and I know you're from Poland, and I spent a few weeks there 1 year, and, you know, I have family Polish roots, and the Polish theater artists have long been some of my favorite theater artists because of their experimentation and the just kind of willingness to go. And, you know, historically, Poland is this country of, to me, resiliency, because, you know, for years you just had Russians and Prussians taking over the territory over and over.
Yeah.
And the Polish people just sat down like, well, we're still going to be here.
Yeah. I mean, as the national anthem, you know, Jeszcze Polska nie zginęła, which, you know, translates to, you know, Poland is not gone yet.
Yeah, that I did not know that. And that's very fitting.
Yeah.
But one thing I actually found very freeing in Poland was, and you know, I know we've just been talking about promoting choice, and was the fact, like, when I went into a grocery store, there weren't 160 different kinds of mustards I had to choose from. Yeah. There were like six.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think sometimes in when you, and as an artist too, and talking about interpreting a text or a piece mm-hmm. of music, like you, it's so much easier to have some sort of roadmap than the complete, like, here's the blank page.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I feel like sometimes when we are able to, it is easy to get overwhelmed with choice.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have to make choices about every single thing of my life, and I go to the grocery store and I'm like, okay, this mustard has more sugar, but this one has more calories, but this one's more expensive per ounce. Like, yeah. You can get that place of,
yeah,
which one's the,
it's
best
exhausting
one. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like, no, I just want to, yeah, grab the mustard.
Yeah.
Because if I can just grab the mustard, then I can be more creative artistically.
Yeah.
And not be exhausted.
Yep. Yep. It's, food in Poland, oh boy. It's dangerous.
My favorite, there was a hot and sour soup that all these places had that had like egg and sausage.
Oh,
and,
yes. Żurek.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I got that soup at like every place we went. I was like, I want that soup because it is so delicious.
Poland's known for soup.
Their own spin on it.
Yep. Yeah. Poland is known for its varieties in soups and as well as different types of cured meats. You know,
speaking my language.
Yeah, I mean, kielbasa. we all know kielbasa here in the U.S., but you're barely scratching the surface when it comes to the different types of meats that are found in Poland. And you know, there is something similar to kielbasa. It's called kabanos. It's a thin sausage that, once it's cured, it actually, you hang it typically over your sink counter and you let it dry, and okay, it becomes almost kind of like a, what are those terrible things that a Slim Jim,
like a jerky? Yeah.
Yeah. The jerky. It's kind of like that, but it's, you know, no chemicals. It's just meat and seasoning and dried. And it's the most, yeah, delicious thing to snack on. And it can be dangerous because you take one, you know, one thing of it, and next thing you know, you've eaten like 2 pounds worth of it and you're like, why am I so full?
I could sit and talk food with you all day. wrapping up, we're going to miss you here in the Quad Cities. At least I am. But you've been such a great, like I said earlier, community partner, and have created a really special place at the Sound Conservatory. So I hope everyone comes out and has a chance to listen to this concert and hear your interpretations, yeah, and your compositions, and kind of this encapsulation of your growth as an artist in your time here.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing having to be in the position I'm in, you know. As I mentioned earlier, it's not by choice that I'm leaving. It's been very difficult trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. What am I going to do with Sound Conservatory? And the fear of losing that, and more so the fear of the community losing what we have built, has really been plaguing my mind for months. And I've put in everything I have financially and emotionally and time-wise into building it into what it is, and out of love for it and what it's accomplished. And I'm really happy to have found someone who will be continuing what we have built He is someone who is as passionate as I am about it. And it has brought a lot of relief knowing that there is someone who wants to continue this and sees the value in what I believe is crucial to our community. And I'm going to miss it greatly here. I've been here 4 years, and I've lived all over the country, and I've never been happier than I have here in the Quad Cities. And it is very painful.
We will miss you too. And the one thing I know about you is that wherever you go, you are going to take action and you're going to do amazing things. So
thank you.
I am proud of what you have brought here, and I'm so excited to see what you do next.
Thank you.
And you'll always have a home here.
Thank you.
So
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Andre, for being my guest today on Talking Art. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for their support and to our producer, Mark. And for more information and tickets for Andre and Friends at the Sound Conservatory on June 22nd and 5:30 p.m., you can visit www.soundconservatory.com. I'm Ben Goujon, and this was Talking Art.